In a state like Ghana, one of the big differences between the way political parties work and a state like the U.S. has not so much to do with necessarily levels of corruption or ways in which the state or parties pervade our everyday life. It's more about the way it would impact the common person. In a state like the U.S., I'm sure there's corruption. I'm sure there's graft. I'm sure public officials get bought off. I'm sure jobs are given to people for certain favors. But in general, this is something which occurs at a much, much higher socioeconomic level status than your typical American. So these are going to be your elite. They're going to be people who are particularly well-connected. For the average person, this is just something which is, you know, using the state for some kind of private gains or using the state to try to benefit oneself. It's just something which is really unimaginable. In Ghana, however, because the private sector is not nearly as fully developed, what you tend to have is especially in rural areas, although you'll see this as well in the poor urban areas, you've got political parties serving as the sources of jobs. You've got political parties who are doling out things like utensils for work. You've got political parties and candidates who are paying for school fees, who are paying for hospital bills. You know, what this does is this makes political parties much, much more central to people's everyday lives. In Ghana, you will see on a regular basis campaign signs, even if the campaign happened 2 years ago. You'll see flags, you'll see T-shirts, you'll see billboards left up. I mean, these are things which are pretty unique to Ghana, or pretty unique, I think, to the maybe less African but West African experience, this, you know, 4-year campaign out of 4 years. So I think it makes it a little bit harder for these third parties and these independent candidates to even make a serious claim, because people, the common people, are tied so you know, tightly to these political parties. The areas where I think perhaps the independent candidates could make a claim is when we look at the ideology of the political parties. I think it doesn't make a lot of sense to spend a whole lot of time there. The NDC certainly puts out a manifesto. The MPP puts out a manifesto. All the third parties do. But what you end up with is you end up with candidates who are not really all that wedded to the policies of their party. And these policies are not ones which, for the most part, there are some very notable exceptions, but for the most part, these policies are ones which don't really affect typical residents. You know, one party will rise fuel costs, but so would the other party if they were in that kind of position. So what you end up with is you end up with these catch-all parties who really work as distribution networks. An independent candidate who is more ideological-minded could perhaps appeal to some of the voters who feel disenfranchised by these distribution networks. You will see sometimes, usually not independent candidates, but sometimes the other party. So in NPP areas, the NDC candidate, in NDC areas, the MPP candidate, who will lose support of the base because the top of the party has gotten kind of compacted. So you've got lots and lots of resource distribution up there. It doesn't trickle down. People start to feel like they've been, especially the youth, like they've been unjustly prevented from having their fair share, and they'll jump ship. Occasionally, you will see this happen with an independent candidate or a third-party candidate. It's usually not really so much as party building as that third party or that independent candidate using this, I think, this political wrinkle to try to capture power on their own. Oftentimes they'll even be bought off by one of the major parties after the fact. So I think the punchline of this story is that Ghana's not very fertile ground for independent or third-party candidates. I mean, it just doesn't have the institutional makeup. and based on the patronage parties as opposed to the ideological parties, just doesn't lend itself to that. We do have third parties. I live in the state of Florida, and I believe the last time we had a presidential election, there were about 15 people on the ballot. It's a pretty easy state to get on the ballot, and I suspect we'll have a similar amount this time. Most Ghanaians will only hear of the top two, Trump and Clinton. A few Americans will pay close enough attention to hear about the Libertarian candidate, Gary Johnson, and the Green Party candidate, Jill Stein. But there will be lots and lots of other people on there, people who might only get, you know, their family members to vote for them. We have a system, however, which is a, just like Ghana, a single-member district system. So if you live in, let's say, New York, where you already know who's going to win, you know, Clinton is going to win New York, it's a Democratic stronghold, or Trump is going to win Nebraska, it's a Republican stronghold, you might decide, you know what, I feel like I don't really like this candidate, so I'm going to vote for one of the minor candidates because my vote doesn't matter. And it really doesn't matter. So vote for the candidate you like the best. Maybe make it easier for them to get on the ballot next time if there's a threshold, let's say 2 or 3 or 5%. If you get more than that, you automatically get on the ballot or you automatically get invited to the debate. But for most people, it really doesn't matter that they go out and vote in the U.S. because of the way we have our system in terms of the presidential election. For people who live in a state like my own, Florida or Ohio or North Carolina or Colorado, and there's a handful of states where our votes really do matter, and I think what you will see is fewer people selecting those third-party and independent candidates. And we make a rational decision, exactly like the Ghanaian voters do. We say, look, we've got these multiple choices. My favorite might be one of the ones that's not in the top two. But if I did, this state is one which is more or less 50-50 Republican Democrat. It became famous in 2000 because the vote was so close between Al Gore and George W. Bush that it was finally adjudicated in the Supreme Court and the state Supreme Court with regard to who won. But we've been a state which has oftentimes voted for the eventual winner. The state voted for Bush in 2004, voted for Obama twice, 2008 and 2012, and polling suggests it's right about 50-50 for Clinton and Trump. So it will be a battleground, if you will. And in a state like that, you get fewer people who will vote for those independent and third-party candidates. Traditional state and the normal state? Okay. It's my own research, I think it's a bit unfair to even talk about it as two states because, yes, they are two states and they're two spheres with their own rules. But these days in Ghana, and I don't think it's just a uniquely contemporary situation. I think it's been like this for quite some time. The state, the formal state and the informal state are so thoroughly intertwined. The informal state has lots and lots of influence in many parts of the country, not all, but in many parts of the country has quite a bit of influence who eventually gets elected. The traditional chiefs and the traditional rulers, oftentimes who's elected to that position, and I mean this in the areas especially where you don't have the paramountcy, see, where they're sent somewhere else to go and you know, engage in kind of negotiation with the paramount chief. In those areas, these are really political positions. So they do work under different rules. They do serve different purposes within society, but I think they're oftentimes complementary and not contradictory. The research sites I've recently worked with, one is, as you mentioned, up in the north, Nob Dom. The other has been in Accra. And the big differences you find in those areas are when it comes to things like law and order. in the north, the police, or I shouldn't say in the north, in the cities, in the villages, when there's a major, major crime happens, the state, the formal state gets involved. But you could go your whole lifetime without really having any kind of serious encounter with the formal state in terms of law and order in the north. In Accra, in a place like Kumasi, in Sekondi, Takoradi, you have much, much more intimate knowledge of, okay, you might not think about taking someone to the court, let's say, but you would think in terms of if somebody stole something from you, you would think about consulting the police. That's just not something many people in the state of Ghana would ever think of doing. And law and order is a major function of the state. So if you're going to abdicate that to traditional authorities, you're abdicating a lot of potential to build up capacity. Yeah, well, the chiefs, it's really different in the cities and the rural areas. It's a fairly recent phenomenon, at least in the north. I don't know about the south, but in the north you start to have in the last 10 or 20 years quite a few chiefs who do not live in the area. They have their work life in Kumasi or in Accra, and then they come back on a fairly regular basis to the here settlements. It is creating a situation which is fundamentally reshaping that relationship. The chiefs used to be this problem solver on a very, very intimate, almost daily basis. They'd be around to, you know, and the elders to consult on various issues in the society. Now what you're finding, especially amongst the youth, is you're finding a lot less, I think, respect for these institutions, and you're finding them to become much more detached than